Welcome to Saving the Game. This is episode 17, Lines and Veils, recorded Thursday, March 21st of 2013, with your hosts, Grant and Peter. Welcome to Saving the Game. I'm Grant.
And I'm Peter. We are back to just our two original founding hosts tonight. We are missing Brandon, and we don't have a guest host this evening, so...
It's tragic.
Back to the old days for one episode.
Yep. Brandon's got something he's got to do tonight. So, Brandon, best of luck with whatever that was.
Tonight, we're going to be talking about lines and veils in... your role-playing games, and if you're not familiar with those terms, that's okay. We're going to define those early in the episode, but first we've got a couple of scripture verses, as is usual for us. So,
yep. Why don't you go ahead and start us off then with the Old Testament reading.
All right. This is Proverbs 22:3. A prudent man foresees the evil and hides himself, but the simple pass on and are punished. And then the second one is...
This is Philippians... Chapter 4, verse 8. Finally, brethren, whatever things are true, whatever things are noble, whatever things are just, whatever things are pure, whatever things are lovely, whatever things are of good report, if there is any virtue, and if there is anything praiseworthy, meditate on these things.
Okay, so lines and veils. Grant, you've got a little bit of history of this here. Do you want to start with that, or?
Sure, it's just a little bit. Lines and veils are two terms coined by Ron Edwards, who's a RPG designer in the sort of the indie side of the market.
In fact, I think he was one of the first really successful indie RPG designers, wasn't he?
He may have been. I'm actually not as familiar with him as I'd like to be. I know he wrote the Sorcerer RPG, and the book that this lines and veils concept comes from is one of the expansions, if you will, for that RPG. It's a book called Sex and Sorcery. Lines and veils refer to basically things players and the GM are not comfortable with and how uncomfortable they are with those things and how they want them treated or not treated in-game. Lines are things that absolutely should not be in the game. They're things
at all.
That
not at all. Not referenced, not that happen off camera, not that, you know, players ever happened. For all intents and purposes, the game world is a world without whatever.
Right. Veils, on the other hand, they're things that can be in the game, but they need to happen off screen. They need to be hinted at, veiled, if you will, but never really shown to the players. It never comes up as something involving player action. They might find evidence of one of these things, maybe have to deal with the consequences of them, but they don't want to be there when they happen.
Right.
And they don't want to be involved with it themselves. Whereas lines, it's a line that you absolutely should not cross. The end. There's, to give you some common examples, Peter, you want to start with some of these?
Sure. So one of the more usual and normal examples of this is sex, either sexual assault or sexuality. I would also say anything sexual involving children would be probably... Those would probably compromise the three most common, at least in my role-playing experience.
Yeah. Well, at least as lines.
Yeah.
Most groups, I think, probably tend to have sex in general as a veiled thing.
Yeah.
Because nobody wants to sit around and hear somebody talk about what they're doing.
Yeah. Or at least,
but, you know,
I certainly don't, but...
Yeah, it's... But, you know, there's the usual, and we go off to do our thing or something like that. You know, that's putting it behind a veil.
Right.
Another common one is graphic violence, including or maybe especially on the part of the PCs. In a lot of RPGs, violence is a common thing. I'm hard-pressed to think off the top of my head of a RPG that doesn't have combat rules.
Primetime Adventures.
Okay, Peter's not hard-pressed to think up an RPG that lacks combat rules, but Peter's smarter than I am.
No, Peter just used to listen to a lot of indie RPG podcasts back in the day, so...
I did say smarter. But yeah, graphic violence, I mean, the violence often happens in combat, but when somebody's sitting there describing the horrible, visceral things they're doing, or the GM's describing all the horrible, visceral things somebody else is doing... That's where it starts getting uncomfortable for a lot of people, so that often
it's the difference between kind of the standard video game, you shoot a guy, he silently falls down, as opposed to what I've heard actual combat veterans describing gunshot wounds as being like.
Yeah. Sort of related to that, torture is a very common line for a lot of people. Nobody wants to hear about that or get involved with it. Similarly, genocide and other...
Specifically,
mass
systematic
murders.
Genocide, Holocaust-type stuff. Casualty situations like natural disasters or an undead army rolling through and killing people are a pretty common trope in role-playing games, but...
Yeah, and I've never personally had anybody get upset about that.
Yeah, but something like... something like the Holocaust or the Soviet gulags or, you know, the pogroms or anything like that.
Yeah.
Where it's a systematic...
Generally, when someone's being... When there's a large number of people being systematically inhumane and evil when they're otherwise perfectly normal people, that's where a lot of people draw the line.
Yeah.
Similarly, child abuse is another big one. People don't want that in the game. They don't want to think about it. They don't want to have to deal with it.
And then... racism and other forms of discrimination.
Yeah. And this is one I hadn't really thought of until you mentioned it. Any ism to use kind of a
racism,
a
sexism,
shorthand.
Ageism. Ageism actually tends to fly a little bit more because it tends to be handled in kind of a jokey way with grandpa jokes or whippersnapper remarks in role-playing games. It's a lot less serious than it is in the real world when, for instance, you're trying to get a job.
Right. Racism, strangely, is one that can really vary wildly from group to group, not in the real world sense, but
in how much
conflicts between species in fantasy RPGs is a very common trope. Things like that, having an underclass of people fighting for their rights is pretty common.
I think probably where you start running into real problems with racism in particular in role-playing games is when it starts to resemble the real world too much.
Yeah,
so
that's probably true.
If you're talking about racism between dwarves and elves in Middle Earth, that's one thing. If you're talking about racism between blacks and whites in the South in the 1960s in the real world, that's a whole nother ball of wax.
Yeah, it's much more real, which I think is really where the problem lies.
And then I think there's an other category that bears mentioning. People will sometimes go through traumatic experiences, and there will be something in particular that will... trigger flashbacks or something. If you've got somebody who has something like that at your gaming table, or if somebody comes out with a really strange line in particular, don't question it. Just be sensitive, and if you're really close with that person and you want to see if they're okay later, that's fine. But at the gaming table, just take note of it, put it on the lines list, and go on with your life, I think.
Absolutely.
There's no need to force them to dredge up the reason why they don't want to deal with, the smell of motor oil or something.
Right. And a lot of times what I've found is that those stranger-seeming lines and veils that they'll ask about, a lot of times those tie to other traumas as well, so...
Yeah. Which means that those are the really important ones, usually.
Yeah. So just be careful of those. Now, a general note on all of these, not just these examples, but lines and veils in general. A lot of these lines and veils can come up either from the GM side of the table or the player side of the table.
Right.
And what you'll find is that players oftentimes need to be even more careful of these than GMs do. Because it seems, in my experience at least, that when these lines and veils get crossed, it's much more powerful and more disturbing and uncomfortable when it's a player character doing it as opposed to the GM. The GM has a little bit of separation.
There's narrative detachment there.
Yeah, yeah, that's a great word for it. Narrative detachment. You know, it's the bad guys are bad and they're doing this thing.
That is bad.
Yeah.
You know? This is your motivation for opposing these bad guys. You know, it's...
Right. Exactly. But in most games, the player characters are at least supposedly protagonists. And they're supposed to be good people doing good things. Now, that's obviously not true all the time, but we'll set that aside. Even aside from that, the fact that your character is part of a group that identifies in some way with these other characters.
All of whom have at least a slice of the people that are playing them in them, by the way.
Right. When one of those characters does something that crosses a line or a veil, it's closer to that person. It's much more visceral and real and more immediate. So players in many ways need to be more careful of these than the GM. The GM has to be careful of them too. I'm not saying the GM can just go willy-nilly and do whatever. But in my experience, it has always really hurt me and been a lot more uncomfortable when it was a player than when it was a GM. And some of that may also be because players tend to go whole hog and, you know, run across lines, whereas GMs sometimes just go a little too close to the veil and overstep it a little bit. You know?
Yeah.
Now, that may just be because I've been mostly fortunate in my GMs.
I've honestly been mostly fortunate. Well, this has come up more than once, but I've been shockingly fortunate in my players in that most of the people that I've played with haven't really sidled up near the lines at all.
Right. I haven't had players really do that much either, but when they accidentally do it or they just forget about it or something like that, it's just, okay. I even find when I'm listening to an actual play, and one of those actual plays crosses my personal veils or lines, I get really uncomfortable when it's a player doing it, less uncomfortable when it's a GM.
Once again, you've got that narrative detachment. The GM is the narrator.
Exactly.
Know?
It's exactly that.
It's interesting, too, that these can vary depending on who they're happening to.
Right.
Torture is a particularly good example here.
Yeah.
Torture is kind of a veil of mine. I'll deal with the fact that, you know, you have bad people that do bad things.
Mm-hmm.
I don't ever want to have to sit there and play out being the victim in a torture scene.
No. Or, ever. You know, have to sit there while another player does it or something like that. That's actually what I was thinking of as far as actual plays. This is actually one of my veils as well, and it kind of gets close to a line for me. It's a really strong veil. I'm okay with...
Yeah, it's a thick veil.
...evidence of it having happened in a game.
Yeah, you come across some bloody manacles or something.
Yeah, or a torture chamber or somebody who has scars from it or something like that, but that's about as close as I want to get to that in a game.
Yeah, I don't even want to have characters walking around hearing screams from other parts of a dungeon or something.
Yeah, it's got to be really impersonal, in the past, something like that, for me, as far as torture.
I actually find that that's a pretty thick veil of mine in video games, too.
Yeah.
There's been some of that in a few games that I've played, and it's really... It's shaken me up when it hasn't made me stop playing entirely.
Yeah, I get that way, too. It's just, do we have to? Really? All right. I don't know. Other ones for me,
Well,
Go ahead.
I'll say that my... Let's start with our lines, because those are probably going to be shorter.
Sure.
Any kind of sexual violence or violence against children is a complete line for me. I don't want to think about that. I don't want to hear about it. You don't need to go that far to convince me that the villain needs to be stopped.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be in there. I realize that stuff happens in the real world, and we have entire professions of people that hunt those creeps down. No, not in my entertainment.
Absolutely. I'm right there with you on that. None of that needs to get into my games either.
Yeah. Real-world racism gets awfully close to a line for me.
Interesting, because for me it doesn't. And I don't know if that's because I'm trying to think of a way to do this without, to say this without being at all political, and I'm not sure there's a way to do it.
I'm from the North.
Yeah, and I'm from the South.
And which means that I don't get steeped in it as much.
Yeah, that's really what it is. It's still a present issue that we're still talking about. And I think that's about as much as we want to get into that, but it is something that isn't foreign to me, if that makes sense.
And it's like jarringly, shockingly, disturbingly foreign to me.
Fair enough.
Northern Illinois is... You know what? Let's go ahead and dig into this a little bit.
Okay.
In my professional life, as I've alluded to before in the podcast, and as anybody who's seen a picture, I'm a white guy with a beard. You know, you can probably tell that just from the sound of my voice and the way that I speak.
Yeah, the beard comes right out in your voice, man. Let me tell you.
Well, the Caucasian, maybe.
Yeah.
I live in Northern Illinois, which is an area that's kind of in the North. It's always been in the North. You know, this is Abraham Lincoln's home state, yada, yada. And I've also, in just my working life, in just the past 5 years, hit like an incredibly diverse cross-section of people in my working life. And it's interesting, for every single person group, that conservative white Christian guys aren't supposed to like, I have met at least one person that is a member of that group that I think is an awesome person. Not just, you know, okay, or somebody that I'm happy to work with, but like, wow, this person's really cool. I want to hang out with them more.
Yeah.
So having had that personal life experience, to kind of turn around and see people portraying characters that will hate somebody just looking at them or hearing one descriptor about their lifestyle or whatever curdles something in my insides, and I just don't want to deal with it.
Yeah. It upsets me as well, but it doesn't upset me to the point where I shut down and don't want to deal with it, which is why it's not a line or a veil for me. I work with people from all over the world. I mean, that's my job.
Yeah,
I went to school.
Everybody uses software.
Turns out they do.
Yeah.
And I went to school, especially in high school, with, I think we had something like 40 countries represented, just in terms of like where people's families were from.
Oh, wow.
It's an international baccalaureate program. So what?
Oh, okay, gotcha.
Yeah, it just, you know, a lot of people from all over. You know, we have a whole county to draw from, and it's just a lot of smart people from everywhere.
Yeah, turns out smart people pop up everywhere too.
Right, and not to mention, you know, yeah, I'm a bearded white guy. All right, fine. the International Baccalaureate Program was put in a minority school that also hosted the English as a Second Language program for the entire county. So anybody from other countries who didn't speak English natively went there. So we had a lot of people from Vietnam, a lot of people from Africa, a lot of people from Latin America and South America, all in this school. It's just what you kind of get used to. But at the same time, because I live down here in the South, there's a lot of, there's still a lot of those tensions and a lot of history that we talk about, if nothing else. So it's something that you're very aware of, and, you know, you're certainly not happy to see it, but it doesn't bother me in that visceral, I don't know what to do with this kind of way. You know, I'm familiar with neo-slave narratives and civil rights movements and things like that, and it's just something that I can bring into the game and be comfortable with, even though it, you know, the ugly side of it is still there, it doesn't make me shut down. And maybe that's kind of the best definition
of
what a line and a veil should, well, or even just what a line and a veil should be. Anything that makes somebody just kind of shut down and stop playing and not be comfortable and not want to participate.
Just want to get up from the table. Yeah.
Yeah. And
that's
depending on how severe that reaction is, maybe it should be a line, maybe it should be a veil, but that's where you really need to start establishing those rules. Some other ones for me.
We're sticking with lines right now. So do we have any more?
I don't really have any other lines. Like I said, torture for me is a pretty thick veil. I think very intense militarism is a veil for me simply because I don't have a lot of experience with it. And it's something that I often kind of get uncomfortable with.
For that, are you talking about, like, actual depiction of military unit tactics and hierarchy,
No.
Or are you talking about,
warmongering? Yeah, kind of the war, jingoistic warmongering, that kind of stuff. That
kill them all
just,
and let God sort them out kind of
yeah,
mentality.
That sort of thing. Actually, you know what? There's a big line or veil that I think we left out, and maybe this is one that we ought to think about here, is politics, as specifically real-world politics. Now, obviously, you may not be able to avoid that or any of these depending on your game, but you need to pick your game depending on the lines and veils.
You know what I think is probably a good real rule for handling any sort of real-world politics? Either everybody's acting in good faith, regardless of whether you think they're right or wrong, or everybody's acting in bad faith, regardless of their right or wrong, where politics is concerned.
Right.
You know, they may have other things that they're doing. You know, this politician who's whatever political ideology you find most disagreeable is acting in good faith and is actively doing what he thinks is right in his political life, but at home he's cheating on his wife, or he's a zombie cultist, or whatever else you're using for your, you know, motivation for thinking of this person as the bad guy.
Right.
And that also allows you to mix sympathetic, or at least to you, sympathetic political views with bad other aspects of life, and then that can make for interesting moral dilemmas and stuff, and you have a more rich and varied story experience, which isn't bad.
Yeah. I suppose we should also mention that religion might be a line or a veil for some people as well.
Yeah, that's true. Obviously, it isn't for us because we're doing a whole podcast about it. But
yeah, but that's something I think people need to be aware of. We would be remiss if we didn't mention that and call it out specifically.
Yeah, and in fact, actually, both of it's really interesting for these. These aren't always found in gaming situations either. There's a hard line against politics and religion, which is actually more of a thick veil in the Fear of the Boot forums, which Grant and I both frequent.
Yeah, any workplace, generally speaking, will have
unless your workplace is an actual political campaign or religious institution.
Okay, yes, and any business that you know would like to make money and you know be congratulated for making money instead of frowned on for making money, generally will have a very thick line as far as religion and politics go. But whether your game does or not, we're not really talking about should a game have a particular line. It's more how to deal with lines and veils as they come up. So anyway, I don't have a ton of others. I would say maybe
sexual matters are a veil for me. I can accept that it's happening off screen because where do the characters come from unless you're all playing like AIs or something? It's one of those things where it's such a part of the real world that I don't know that it works all that great as a complete line, because then you can't even address things like marriage.
Yeah.
You know, like these two characters, if it's a line, it's like these two characters are married. Hey, you know, that implies a sexual relationship. You can't have that in the game. Okay, but there's more to marriage than just that, and it's, you know, this important institution, and it's this wonderful life-enriching thing, and it's like, I like being married. I want my characters to be able to have that sometimes, so
I'm with you there. I generally want the sex. off screen.
And I really don't want to see a whole lot of it either. I don't want to be constantly stumbling across disheveled bedsheets in a game that I'm playing.
Yeah, well, I think at that point the GM's throwing it in your face a different way.
Yeah.
It's not as thick a veil for me. I don't care. I think the big reason it's a veil for a lot of people, aside from just general uncomfortableness with sex and sexuality for a lot of people, it's that line between player characters and their relationships and sexuality, and the line between the players' relationships and sexuality
tends to
blur more than anything else between the player and the character.
I would imagine uncomfortable and disturbing ways.
Yeah. You know, depending on mental health and how comfortable they are with other people, and if there's a significant other at the table or listening in, it can get awkward.
Just like introversion, extroversion.
Yeah. Exactly. That's one of the big ones that makes people uncomfortable for all sorts of different reasons, and that's going to happen. But it's just the player is involved with that one more than almost any of these others. So, you know, my gaming group, actually, it's not a huge deal because we're all married to each other.
Right. It's like you kind of pair off the characters the same way the players are and off you go, huh?
Yeah, they're paired up. All right. Likewise, sexuality doesn't bother me very much. Questions of sexual identity, things like that. I don't care. That's just not something that bothers me.
Yeah.
But for other people, I'm sure that is a problem.
It's one of those things where, here's the thing. If that's like a facet of the character, like it tends to be in the real world, like the color of their eyes or the kind of music that they listen to or what kind of car they drive, then it's fine. If the entire story or even one session starts to become about, you know, this one particular character's sexuality, then it's not just uncomfortable, it's really obnoxious.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess that's kind of where I would have a veil on it. But at that point, you're right, it's more just, why are we doing this?
Yeah, it's like,
you know? Yeah.
And the only reason I can think of to go there is you are deliberately stepping over the religion and or politics line.
I will say that that is not the case because I've been in games where that's happened without religion or politics coming up at all.
Oh, okay.
It's still uncomfortable for me, but that's because I'm an introvert.
Yeah.
Well, and my GM
so
is not.
You'll get no argument for me on that particular point.
I am introverted. My GM is much less introverted than I am. He's an actor. You know, he'll throw these things out there, and then we'll just, you know, I at least will be like, eh.
Grant has a really interesting grimace that the listeners can't see right now, but I...
It plays so well on radio. Anyway, I'm trying to think. I don't think I really have a lot of other veils.
You know, strangely, I can deal with just about any level of violence until somebody really starts trying hard to make it squick-worthy.
Yeah, attention to detail is where I start drawing the line.
Yeah.
You know, it's like...
I can deal with combat, I can even deal with, like, serious injury and trying to treat somebody.
Mm-hmm.
I can deal with small-scale violence, I can deal with massive-scale violence, I can deal with systematic violence. It will make me want to hunt the perpetrators down in the game.
Right.
I can process that.
Yeah. I have some weird... You know what? I'm going to go ahead and say it. I have some weird hang-up with, like, viscera or something like that, because I can hear people talk about injuries and human anatomy and things like that, and it doesn't bother me. I have no problem with biology. I can't watch it at all. And I don't know if it's just I react badly to blood and organs and things like that or what, but I can't watch an episode of House. I can listen to it and laugh all day long, but I can't look at the TV.
You know,
it's a weird little thing.
It's a really good thing for you that you went into software instead of law enforcement.
Yep.
I ever tell you about the first night of my very first criminal justice class?
No.
It was taught by a, as far as I know, he actually still is the chief of police of one of the towns around the community college where I got it.
Cool.
First night of class, first 5 minutes of class, he walks up and puts something on the slide projector. And he's like, all right, you know, I'm going to start you off with something that's going to be disturbing to a lot of you. But if you cannot handle this, you should not be trying to get into this field. And he flips the slide projector on. And it's a guy who unsuccessfully tried to commit suicide with a shotgun.
Oof.
And blew his whole lower mandible off and his tongue is hanging. And
oh, yeah.
Yeah, it was really gruesome.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and see, talking about it doesn't bother me much at all. Think about it, and like, as soon as I start visualizing it, I'm like, ugh, that's squicky.
If you'd actually seen the picture, you would have left the room, I'm guessing.
I'm sure I would have, post-haste, with a trash can. it's a thing I can't do. So I guess something like that is probably a veil, that graphic violence thing.
I saw some evidence photos of some child abuse, you know, like bruises and stuff in one of my classes, and I was angry for days.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a definite line for me, no question.
Yeah.
Anyway, do you have any others that you want to bring up in particular?
Torture of NPCs is a veil, kind of a medium to thick one for me, and torture of or by PCs is a hard, thick, armor-plated, shiny line.
Okay.
With spikes and warning signs and, you know, like...
anything else you can think of, yeah.
Yeah, yellow triangles on it and, yeah.
Gotcha. Okay. All right, so we've spent a lot of time talking about different lines and veils and what they are and things like that. We should probably talk about how to use them.
Yeah.
How to bring them up in a game and implement this whole idea in your game. I will say the first thing to do, if at all possible, is when you are starting a game, have this conversation, get people thinking about their lines and veils, and establish these lines and veils before the game starts.
And here's the thing. That is often a real buzzkill of a conversation.
Yes.
It is good to have that conversation after everybody is already invested. You want them to be excited about their awesome new player character. You preferably want to set that, I would say, in the middle of one of your initial sessions. You want to kind of lay out stuff and get people going with concepts first.
Well, no. And I'm going to stop you there. I disagree.
Okay.
I would say you need to have this conversation before character creation so that character, you know, somebody who has a very different set of line and veils than you do
will not build a character around violating one of your lines or veils. Gotcha.
Exactly. Yeah, that's got to happen. I would actually say nowadays the best way to do this is by email. And I know that sounds impersonal, but the impersonal nature
is actually good in this case. Yeah.
Makes it easier. First of all, the GM has a written record, which makes his life a lot easier. Okay.
Compile all of these, write them down on a piece of paper, do a little printout, tape it to the back of his GM screen, like, never touch on these things, and off he goes, you know?
Right. Just do that, done. And for players,
the GM should just really make extra copies of those and hand them out on note cards or something.
Not a bad idea, but at the very least, if you make a character that doesn't cross any lines and, you know, doesn't get too close to any of the veils, maybe brushes up against one or two, and I'll get to that in a little bit. Maybe brushes up against a little bit of that if you absolutely have to fit the character concept in there that way, but definitely doesn't cross any of those lines. It's unlikely to come up in the game. Just sort of keep it in mind. I think having it, you know, in like your character sheet document or something like that would be nice, but I think if everybody makes a good faith effort to make characters that avoids the problem issues,
yeah,
and the GM doesn't bring them up in the game, you're generally going to avoid those. But I think you've got to do it before the game starts, no question. Now, obviously, you can't always do it before the game starts. First of all, you may not think of some. This is something you brought up, and I didn't think of it. And I do this sometimes. I don't realize something will bother me until it comes up.
You know, one other thing that I kind of along those lines that I want to toss out there,
mm-hmm.
if players are not used to having this conversation before a game starts, just bringing it up may put them on the defensive. Like, what kind of a game are you going to run where you have to ask me this question? Or what kind of a person do you think I am that I'm going to be bringing this stuff up in your game? Are both possible reactions. So
really?
You've got to be ready to deal with those.
See, I would think the more common reaction, or at least that I have seen, is, you know, what do you mean I can't talk about these things? Who are you to tell me how to play my character? Or what character to create? So I think you need to have this conversation beforehand.
Once again, exactly, we demonstrate that we have played with very different people.
Yeah. And I'm thinking specifically of, like, two people out of my whole gaming career, in all fairness.
Okay, gotcha.
There are some people like that. They exist. We'll talk about them in a second.
Well, and it's, you know, that may be one of those times where you pull somebody aside and say, look, you know, this may not be the gaming group for you.
Well, or
if you require absolute creative freedom without respect to other people's emotions, you need to go find some other people that are similarly made of stone.
Yeah.
I wish you the best. The door is that way. Our video gaming LAN party night, which you are still welcome at, is still on Thursday. You know, it's...
Yeah, something like that. Or, you know, you just need to talk and say, well, they may just be feeling defensive for whatever reason. You know, it may just be... It may be something specific to that night. You know, they've had a terrible day. They've been told what to do at work all day, and they're sick of it, you know?
What do you mean I can't crush the orc over and over with my hammer until it's paced, you know?
That's what I do! Yeah.
Yeah,
you know? Like... And again, you know, it may be just ingrained habits. I talk about a lot of bad gaming habits a lot. This is one of them, where it's just, no, this is how I've always gamed. Well, now's maybe
time
the time
to
change
it. New, you know? It's...
Yeah.
Yeah, we game this way.
Right. So
give it a shot before you knock it, you know?
Yeah, it's to try and sum this up, I guess, I think having this conversation is going to be awkward, and if your group doesn't immediately jump on it, especially if you're a player suggesting this rather than the GM, keep pushing it and say, look, this is important. We'll all feel better if we do this. The other thing that's very important, relating to this initial conversation and any discussion of Lines and Veils, unless you are really comfortable with the person, don't dig for details about why something is a line or a veil for this person.
Yeah, and by really comfortable with the person, we mean this is a friend of, you know, many years or a spouse or something.
Yeah, you have to be the best judge of, you know, who this is. But generally speaking, it's if you don't know, it's probably not your business. Now,
especially the stranger it is, you know, it's
well,
like
the stranger, or if it's something where it's just, you know, you don't know why this has been brought up. Like, I don't, I'll tell you, I have never been abused as a child. I've never been a witness to it, anything like that. Okay. I will still list child abuse as one of the things I don't want to see at all in my game. It's a line.
Oh yeah.
No, thank you. There's no way for anybody who isn't me to tell whether I'm saying this because, you know, I just don't want to see it, or because I have a history that I have to deal with and it's going to bring back all sorts of horrible memories and just, I will go
home and
weep. And
they really don't need to know.
Yeah, they don't need to know. Now, this conflicts a little bit with our goal as Christians to care for each other, to pray for each other, help each other out, and generally be Christian towards one another. I will say I still think it is, generally speaking, none of our business unless you really feel like somebody needs to open up about something. But even then, I cannot stress enough, be careful with it.
Yeah, in that case,
don't be a busybody.
Yeah, your best move may be to just make it known that if there's something they need to deal with, you're there to help if they want.
Yeah. I would say, too, if it's something somebody's really uncomfortable with, just...
Prying into it will create the same kind of reaction as bringing it up in the game will.
Exactly. You don't want that. If it's somebody you're not good friends with already, use the game to become a better friend with them, let them open up to you on their own, and help them with that issue then. Don't.
Or just, you know, let their existing support network help them with it if it's obvious they have one.
Yeah. And, you know, certainly pray for them. I will happily encourage you pray for them.
Yeah, that's never bad advice.
But
never, ever bad advice.
Absolutely. But don't go poking at old wounds. So, okay. It's 2/3 of the way through the GM's campaign. One of the GM's big plot points has come up, and you discover that this is a line or a veil that you had no idea you were uncomfortable with because it didn't cross your mind because it's something you don't think of very much. Now what?
Well, I think probably the first thing to do is here's the thing. If it's like a line and you're shutting down at the table, you got to say something in the moment. I think if the game is actually turning into a traumatic experience, you do nobody any favors, including the GM and yourself, by keeping silent at that moment.
Yeah. And I would say talk to the GM at that point. Just say, hey, listen, can we take like a 5-minute break or something? I'll, you know, get some drinks,
And if they don't get it, say, look, we really need to stop right now. I will tell you why privately off to the side, but we really need to stop right now.
Yeah. And just go ahead and be like, hey, if you have to, and generally speaking, a GM will be okay with this. Hey, can I talk to you for just a second?
Yeah.
And if you have to, just be like, I got something I want my character to do, and I need to talk to you about something. Give the GM something your character's doing, and then say, listen, I don't know where you're going with this, but I don't like it.
Yeah.
You know, have that conversation real quick. And don't be afraid to say, can we put this on the back burner for a little bit? Can we, or back it off for a little bit, and I'll talk to you more about this after the game, by email, whatever it is, but just go ahead and try and put a stop to it if it's something that's really crossing a line for you. If it's kind of brushing a veil of yours aside, if it's something that you...
If you can kind of grimace and grit your teeth and be like, eh, I really wish you hadn't done that, but okay.
Yeah.
That's one thing. If it's just like, no.
Right.
Yeah, then it's time to stop and have the conversation right then.
You still need to have that conversation with the GM.
Yeah,
and say,
you do.
Listen,
because
this is something I'm not comfortable with, but if it's something you can kind of deal with that evening, my personal recommendation is to try and let that slide and then talk to the GM afterwards. If it keeps getting more and more uncomfortable, go ahead and stop it and say, look, all right, we got to talk. Because if you're not having fun, there's no point.
Yeah, and more to the point, if you're not having fun isn't taking the point of, boy, this is kind of a boring stretch, I hope it picks up soon, but this is actively, you know, going to haunt me later that I had to listen to this. That's not something that you should ever have to put up with in your hobbies.
Yeah. I would also say, if you see someone else who seems to be shutting down as a result of this, quietly call your GM's attention to that, or just kind of ask them, are you okay? Or is it just...
And obviously, if you're the GM and you notice this happening, shift gears immediately.
Yeah, find some way to extricate yourself from the situation, or just change what you are focusing your descriptions on. Like, let's say, let's pick a less ephemeral example. Let's say that the parties had to go into a torture chamber. Okay?
Okay.
Now, for me, that's a veil that I really don't like, and, oh, hey, you know, there's active torture going on, and, this is visceral and horrible, and the fires are burning, and, you know, there's horrible smells, and yada, yada, yada. The GM's really setting the scene, and he's making it, you know, feel and smell and sound. He's getting all the senses in, and it's horrible. Okay? And then, you know, if I'm the GM, I suddenly realize, wait a second, my players are really kind of getting uncomfortable
kind of
with
green.
This. Okay, well, let's, you know, instead of talking about, you know, the visceral sensations involved, focus on the characters, the people that you're talking to in there. Maybe the haughtiness of the torturer as opposed to what he's doing. You know, change the emphasis from the setting to somebody there. And, you know, still the whole point is to get the horribleness across, but now the horribleness is these people as opposed to what they're doing and the situation and the acts. You know, just change the narrative emphasis, and that will help back away from that some.
I think the other thing that you can do there too is, if you see people starting to shut down, this is one of the things that I would probably knee-jerk to as the GM. In the situation that you just described, you know, they're walking in there and I can see my players turning green. I can be like, all right, here's the thing. You've got the drop on these people. They're not paying attention to you. You can stop this. What do you do?
Right. Assuming it's a scenario where you want combat to happen.
Not even necessarily combat, just any kind of confrontation. You know, let's use child labor actually as one.
Okay.
You're playing government inspectors. You found a sweatshop. You walked in, there's all these little kids like bent over sewing machines, you know, it's 115 degrees in here, there's no air conditioners, no fans, they're all, you know, sweating like crazy, people are screaming at them to work harder and stuff. You've just walked in with three uniformed cops behind you and full powers of arrest. You can stop this right now.
Right. And then let the players do it.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's probably a very good way to do it. Give them some control over the situation. That's a lot. I think a lot of these relate to powerlessness in some way. So
being forced to witness something inhumane and being powerless to stop it is rightly disturbing to most people.
Yeah, or it's something they have experienced and has made them feel powerless, you know, various forms of childhood abuse and things like that. You get a lot of that. PTSD.
Yeah.
Is big on that as well.
I think in that case, you either figure out a way to quickly remove the inhumanity, or you figure out a way to equally quickly remove the powerlessness.
Right. I think that's a good point. I like that.
One thing that I would say is, just because you're giving people the ability to stop this stuff does not mean that it's automatically okay to cross these lines and veils. This is an emergency countermeasure, not a technique that you should be employing all the time.
Right. So there's another situation where these kind of come up, or where you have to sort of face up to these, and that's if you join an existing group or an existing game that has very different lines and veils than what you're used to or what you're comfortable with. Dealing with that is a little bit awkward because, let's face it, most of us tend to be just slightly socially awkward geeks who don't want to rock the boat.
Well, and you're also coming into somebody else's house, as it were. You know,
yeah.
It's like you're the outsider, you're the newcomer. It's hard to kind. You don't really have any authority to set rules, and you don't want to come off as being too whiny.
Right.
Here's the other kind of flip side to that. You're drawing in a bunch of new players from a bunch of different groups that all come from different kind of gaming cultures, and they've all got a different assumed set of lines and veils. Like, you know, in my group, we would never touch on this, but this is okay.
Right.
And I think in that case, what you really kind of have to do is go with the most restrictive set that you can build from everybody's combined. And if that seems like it's onerous or something that would rankle, my first not at all joking piece of advice is go back and listen to the episode with Shannon Dixon. That woman is constitutionally incapable of running dark games, but they all sound awesome.
Very, very true. I know, actually, she tends to punish people who use foul language in her games. And I don't mean characters. She punishes the players who do it by messing with their characters, which is a lot of fun. And it's hilarious when she describes it. But you're right. When you have a new group that you're pulling together from a lot of different gaming groups or gamers with different gaming histories, you'll definitely kind of run into this situation. I think if it's one person joining the group who has different tastes, if you will, and needs in gaming, generally speaking, introducing a new character changes things anyway. And there's a lot of hand-waving.
Yeah.
It's very hard to organically integrate a new character into a group. There are times when you can do it, but it's so hard to have the new person join the group at the same time that you could organically pick up a new character that the party trusts implicitly. You know, they, most of the time it's, oh, you're wearing the magical player character shirt. Come with us.
Yeah.
You know?
You know, a really interesting example of,
let me finish this thought real
okay.
quick.
Okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
I would say when you do that, that is a good time because other stuff is going to change anyway and the feel of the game is going to change anyway. That is a good time to change the things you emphasize and don't emphasize and the lines and veils you have in the game to accommodate them. Go ahead and do that.
That'll do two things. It'll prevent you know, the kind of hard feelings that you're trying to avoid by having lines and veils in the first place. And by taking the lines and veils of the new person seriously, it will automatically make them feel more welcome and invested in the group.
Right.
Because you're
now,
taking
you
some
are...
time to make sure they're comfortable.
Exactly. Now, if you are the new person who is going into this group and nobody else in this group has even heard of the concept of lines and veils, I would say go ahead and bring it up and just say, listen, you just maybe not make a huge big deal out of it, but just say, listen, Mr. GM, these are a couple of the things that I'm just not real comfortable with. Does your game feature these? First of all, I would say find out if the current game is dealing with things that are a line for you. If the game is this...
Ideally do that before joining the group, too.
Well, or at least this game. You know,
yeah.
if they are running a game that is a deep exploration of some very serious issues, and they're running the game to really explore this some dark concepts in a very serious, mature manner, that's great. I encourage them to do so. But if it's something you're uncomfortable
like for
with...
For me, personally, Roots, the role-playing campaign, would be something I absolutely could not participate in.
Right. But, you know, if it's something that they're playing, great. Maybe wait until they're done with that game to join the group and start gaming with them. Obviously, they're still cool people. Go hang out with them. You know,
yeah.
Do board game night,
or
whatever.
If they do other forms of gaming that don't require this sort of thing, like card game night, board game night, LAN party night, you know.
If they're running this game every 2 weeks and then intervening Tuesdays they're running another game, maybe get in that one, whatever. Just be aware of it. If it's something where it's not integral to the game, though, talk to the GM and say, you know, hey, these are the couple things I'd like to avoid. I wouldn't say tell all the other players, you know, come in with your list of demands, as it were, because they've already got characters made. And I think what you'll find is a lot of players will follow the GM's lead on what to get
generally
into,
speaking,
what to
yeah.
not get into.
And I think most GMs that are worth their salt will actually be appreciative of that.
Yeah.
Because it's hard enough to keep a bunch of people invested in your game anyways.
Yeah.
The last thing you want to do is put in something that's going to make somebody shut down.
Absolutely. And frankly, if you're introducing this whole concept of lines and veils to your group, your GM hopefully will go, oh, that's really cool. In an ideal world, of course, they'll go, well, where did you hear about this? And you'll say, Saving the Game podcast. Here's the episode. Here's this awesome podcast I listened to. And we'll say, you should probably be listening to Fear the Boot and Happy Jacks and other better podcasts. But, you know, there we go. The one last thing I did kind of want to bring up, are there, and this is a question I have for you, Peter, because I'm not sure of the answer.
Okay.
If you are the GM or another player and you know somebody has a particular veil. I don't think you should do this with lines, but if you know somebody's got a particular veil, is it okay to sort of edge up close to that sometimes, specifically to push them out of their comfort zone a little bit and get a reaction from them? I'm not saying,
boy,
you know, throw the veil aside and, you know.
Yeah, I think that really depends on the people involved, right? If you're doing it just to get under somebody's skin, I think it's never okay.
Right.
If you're doing it because, okay, here's a hypothetical situation. You've observed this about me. I have what people sometimes consider to be an overdeveloped sense of morality. I tend to be very knee-jerky about certain things, and you know, I can get offended by what I perceive as cruelty and stuff going on.
Mm-hmm.
If a game that I'm in is stagnating, a GM could do a lot worse to get it going again by, like, kind of gently prodding that part of my personality that will kind of trigger a reflexive action.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not something that you should rely on heavily or do every week.
Right.
You know, it's one of those things where it's like, okay, player X is, you know, a mature adult, has, you know, sufficiently thick skin and, frankly, probably a sufficiently forgiving personality to deal with an occasional prod-style breach of one of their veils.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's okay to use it a little bit.
Yeah.
I think also if you've got something where, for whatever reason, you're trying to do something that's like really powerful and affecting, especially if you're trying to do some kind of a message and you need to get close to somebody's veil.
To the player
and you know
as opposed
it, yeah,
to the character.
And you, well, and you know it in advance.
Right.
I think it can be appropriate to pull the person aside and say, like, hey, look, I know you're really not comfortable with this. I want to use this in this way. I'm sorry I'm spoiling you a little bit, but this is, you know, like, mm-hmm. you know, is it okay if,
right.
you know, I promise I will treat this with maturity, and but is it okay if? And if the person says no, well, then go to plan B. If the person
right.
says, yeah, I can probably deal with that, just don't make a habit of it, okay, go
right.
for it. And then do the person, you know, respect the person by making it actually count. Don't
sure.
use it as some throwaway or cheap thing.
Yeah, I think you said something important in there, and that's emotion. These are emotional triggers.
Yeah, this is not something you can left brain to death.
I really don't think you should ever do this with anybody's lines. Things that they absolutely flat out say, I don't want this in the game. I don't want to think about this during my fun time. Don't.
Yeah,
don't
I don't want to think about this during my serious time. Occasionally I'm
right.
forced to, and it haunts me for days. You
right.
know?
Don't, none of that. If it's something where you know it's they're okay with a little bit of it, I think using that to get an emotional reaction out of a player that makes what's happening in the game more powerful for them and more rewarding for them, that's good. You have to do it sparingly.
Yeah, you actually just touched on something important here. You should never use this to punish somebody for doing something you don't like in a game.
Yeah, no, absolutely not.
Ever.
No.
Under
no
circumstances should this ever be used as a stick to beat your players with.
Yeah. Generally speaking, a stick to beat your players with is a bad idea anyway, and hitting emotional
yeah.
sore spots is absolutely...
That's,
I will tell you, it's not
a
Christian...
Move.
It's not
yeah.
a Christian thing to do at all.
It's not a humane thing to do at all, frankly.
Exactly.
It's a borderline sociopathic thing to do.
Yes, it is. So, having said that, if you are carefully doing this to really get an emotional reaction out of this particular person, to make it rewarding for them, I think it's okay to do it in that situation. And I have seen this done effectively before. And what's cool about it when it does happen and is done right is that it's not just powerful for that one particular player. It's powerful for everyone else who gets to witness that and has
oh,
that
yeah.
reaction
that,
and
kind
of feels their
the
pain
table.
And then everybody sort of helps them deal with it. And it's a really fun moment. It's powerful and it's tough at that moment, but then you sort of sit back and go, whew, wow.
It's a little bit of a gaming group bonding moment there.
It is. And it's a little cathartic in some ways. This requires a lot of skill. I will say that. I don't think I could do it, frankly. I don't think I'm a good enough GM.
I think I could do it with the right group of people that I'd been gaming with for long enough in a campaign that had been running for long enough.
Yeah.
Because I think I've done it once in the past accidentally and just rolled with it when I realized it was working. But tread carefully. This is thin ice.
Yeah, and by the same token, if you see this happening as a result of player interaction, roll with it and keep an eye on it, and don't be afraid to deflect certain things, tone things down, and otherwise help keep it under control, or if you absolutely have to, just call a halt to it. But if at all possible, keep it going and keep it at the right level as a GM when you see this organically happening. I'm glad you sort of agree with me on this, because I was thinking, you know, I'm okay. In certain ways, when I am gaming, I want to have some of my boundaries pushed a little bit.
Yeah, but not all of them, and not for no good reason.
Right, and certainly not all the time. You know, but there's one or two cases where it's like, you know, yeah, this makes me uncomfortable, but there's a real reward to it, and now I'm involved. It's more than, here is my character and what he thinks, it's me in it now.
So I think probably almost all of the advice that we've been given, or that we have been giving here, boils down to really two things. Be respectful of each other, and treat these topics with the seriousness that they deserve, if you do have to go near them.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add to that. I think that's exactly right.
And I think, honestly, as Christians, we should probably be a little bit wary of doing stuff that's going to push a lot of these boundaries anyways.
That's true.
It can be not edifying, you know?
Right, and there's no... This is, I think, a point you and I disagree on some anyway. I don't have a problem with a mature discussion of these topics in a game. I don't have a problem with them coming up in a game sometimes. But there are, you know, there's a difference between something that is unpleasant coming up, but that we're all comfortable dealing with, and something that's just going to make people shut down and makes people uncomfortable.
I agree with you there. The way that it's handled, maybe.
A lot of it does come down to the way it's handled. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, I think we can go ahead and wrap this one up then.
Yeah.
I'm pretty happy with it.
Yeah, I actually am too. Thanks for listening, folks, and hopefully we'll have Brandon, maybe even a guest host, back next time. Till then, thanks for listening to Saving the Game, and we're going to say goodnight here.
Night, folks.
This has been a production of Saving the Game, copyright 2013. This podcast may be redistributed under a Creative Commons non-commercial, non-derivative license, provided that credit is given to savingthegamepodcast.org. Our music is by Ryan Humphrey. For past episodes, podcast news from our hosts, or to connect with us, visit our website at savingthegamepodcast.org. God bless, and happy gaming.